Pavel Exner for this very kind invitation. And so I'm going to present your work on quantum transport in a weakly disordered system, in weakly disordered networks. So this done has been done in Orsay, so mostly in collaboration with Gilles Montembeau. And first I would like to start by showing you the kind of system I have in mind and the physics I will discuss later. So what I mean by networks of weakly disordered metallic wires is shown, for example, on two examples on this slide. So here, is, for example, a very thin ring made of gold. So it's of the typical size of the ring is one micrometer, and this ring is connected through the wire at very large contacts through which one can inject some current in order to study the transport properties of such a system. So another example of network of metallic network is represented here. So here you have a square network that is made this time of silver wires. So again, the typical size of the wire is of the order of 1 micrometer. The width of the wire is 60 nanometers, so very thin wires, and this network is connected at two large contacts through which some current is injected. So here are other networks that are represented. So
you will say something why people make this?
Well, the interest
because
is
it's possible.
Well, because it's possible, but I mean, the main interest is to study phase coherence in such metallic systems. And okay, so
can you expose it to a magnetic field? The system?
Yes, certainly. And so, in the introduction, I will do some physics and recall you the very basic physical phenomena that I will be interested in, and. In the second part, I will describe some properties of the quantum transport in such network, and I will put the emphasis on the non-local properties of the quantum transport. And in the third part, I will be interested in the effect of electron-electron interaction, and more precisely on how electron-electron interaction kills phase coherence in such systems. So this talk is, so it's not, it's rather, I have followed the recommendation of Pavel Exner, who asked me to do to give some overview of several works and instead of going deeply into one precise subject. So let me start with, to explain a little bit the physics that occurs in such systems. So at the classical level, if I consider such networks of weakly disordered wires, the transport is simply described by the Drude's law, and I can consider that every wire is plays a role of a small resistance, so I have, at the classical level, a network of classical resistance. But here, what I am interested in is the quantum transport in such networks, that is, I am interested into a regime where the wave-like nature of the electron motion matters. So this is the first important point. So basically, it means that I am studying quantum transport at temperature which are typically below few Kelvin. And the second important ingredient is the disorder, because in the networks I was showing you in the first slide, the metal is not a perfect crystal, but is always subject to present some defects, impurities or structural defects, and therefore the waves are scattered by these defects. So the two basic important ingredients are, first, interference effect in the presence of disorder. And so if I start by considering a very simple question of transport through a disordered wire. So here I have represented a wire that is connected at two large contacts through which I can inject some current. So it is well known that the transport properties of this wire are well characterized by the conductance, so the inverse of the resistance. And it is well known that the conductance can be expressed using the Landauer-Bütikofer formalism as the square modulus of a sum of quantum amplitudes, where these are probability amplitudes to go from one side of the wire to the other side. So this square modulus can be expanded as, I mean, there is a sum of diagonal terms that is a sum of probabilities, but there is also a sum of of diagonal terms where the sum extends over all possible paths that an electron can follow inside the wire. So now, an important information is to have in mind that in real metal, in the metal we are interested in, we are in a regime which is said to be a weak disorder regime, that is a regime where the Fermi wavelength is much smaller than the elastic mean free path between between successive collision of the electron over the random potential. So in this regime, the amplitudes associated to the electronic path inside the disordered medium have a very large phase that varies extremely rapidly from when I just change slightly the path. So amplitudes typically have this large phase, which is the Fermi wave vector times the length of the path, and can have, if there is some magnetic field, also a magnetic phase. So now, what do I observe if I measure the conductance of a wire? So typically, if we measure the conductance of a very short mesoscopic wire that is fully coherent, we observe a very complicated figure that fully characterizes the interference pattern through this complicated medium. So in order to observe the interference figure, I have to vary some parameter, and a convenient parameter that can be varied is indeed a magnetic field. So this interference parameter is, in a sense, equivalent to the figures that I obtained in interference through a double slit experiment. But here, the medium through which interference occurs is much more complicated, and this is why I have a much more complicated figure. So I must insist that this figure is completely reproducible and is a characteristic of the disordered configuration inside the system. That is, if I measure the conductance as a function of the magnetic field, and I can wait a few days, if I'm not heating the sample, which can lead to reorganization of the disorder configuration, 2 days later I can get exactly the same curve, which is called the magnetofingerprint of the sample. So next, the question is, so this phenomenon is called a universal conductance fluctuation because the amplitude of the fluctuations are always of order of the quantum conductance E square over H, where E is the charge of the electron. So now we could ask the question, what can I observe if I realize some disorder averaging? So a convenient way to realize a disorder averaging is to consider, instead of a very short mesoscopic wire, a very long wire which realize disorder averaging, because in a long wire, different regions of the wire do behave independently, in the sense that there is no interference relating to different parts of the wire. So looking at this figure, one could think that averaging over disorder will completely wash out this pattern, but in fact it is not true. One observes, in fact, indeed, that there remain some very small correction at zero magnetic field, and this correction, which is visible on this figure, and this correction is destroyed when one applies a sufficiently large magnetic field. So this phenomenon is called the weak localization, and now I am going to explain where it is originating from. So in order to... I remind you that the part in the conductance that interests me is the quantum part that describes interference between different trajectories, electronic trajectories. And you know, here I would like to give you an idea of what kind of trajectories can survive disorder averaging to give rise to this weak localization correction. So for that purpose, it's interesting to remind that the classical conductance, which is related to the sum of the probability of these probabilities, is some large contribution. The dominant contribution in such systems, because I am summing different contribution which all with all the same phase, that is all positive contribution, and this gives me an idea of what kind of contribution should be kept in order to have something that survives disorder averaging. And instead, indeed, to avoid to consider too large phase when I pair different trajectories, I want to avoid too large phase mismatch. And this can be achieved if, starting from one side of the sample, I follow a given sequence of impurity and I form a loop, and at some point in the loop I reversed one of the trajectory. So then the phase mismatch is only due to the small crossing which appears here. So this kind of interference between such trajectories, so it describes interference of reverse trajectories, reverse loop. This is precisely the typical interference contribution that give rise to this localization correction. So let me now give you a few properties of this weak localization. So first important property is that it is a small correction. So it's much smaller than the dominant Drude contribution. And indeed, this is due to this very small phase mismatch here. And a second property is that considering the conductance of the wire, this is a negative contribution. So this is it describes the interference of reverse path, describe increase of the backscattering, therefore decrease of the conductance. So a third property is that it is a coherent contribution. So indeed, it's part of the interference term, that is, it's a quantum contribution which describes interference between reverse paths, which is clear on this small picture. And this is the main interest from the experimental point of view, is that it provides some experimental probe, in order to study phase coherence in disordered metals. And the last property is that this weak localization correction is magnetic field sensitive, and which is also rather clear on this little figure, because when I add the magnetic flux, if I add magnetic flux along this part of the sequences, then the magnetic flux here cancel. But because I have reversed one of the trajectories along the loop, then the magnetic flux associated to the loop adds. Therefore, this makes this weak localization correction sensitive to a magnetic field, which is the way it is measured experimentally. So now it is clear that in order to study interference effect, very convenient systems are networks, because I can in this case realize some interference corresponding to trajectories going in different arms of the system. So here I would like to recall you few properties of the conductance of a ring. So if I consider a ring that is connected at two contacts, I remind you that the conductance of a ring is a periodic function of the magnetic flux that pierces this ring. And this is nothing but the Aronoff-Bohm effect that originates from interference between electronic trajectories going through the two arms of the ring. So now, it is, I mean, according to what I said before, when I realize some disorder averaging, some such interference contribution vanishes due to the large orbital phase, and the interference terms that survive disorder averaging are interference terms with describing the interference of this reverse loop. And if such, if this reverse loop encloses the ring, this gives rise to some phase which is twice the magnetic flux. That is, whereas the conductance, a given conductance, is a periodic function as a function of the magnetic flux with the period H over E, the quantum flux, the average conductance is a periodic function which half of this period. So this phenomenon is known as Altschuler-Arnold oscillation, and I will be mostly interested in the following, in studying Altschuler-Arnold-Spivak oscillation in networks and in large networks, and how the network affects the shape of this oscillation. So here I can show you experimental data. So these data correspond to the two pictures I have shown in the very first slide. So here is the resistance as a function of the magnetic flux for the gold ring, mesoscopic ring. So here, on the top of the aperiodic universal conductance fluctuation, it is possible to see the regular oscillation with a period corresponding to one quantum flux in the ring. So these are the Aronoff-Bohm oscillation. And now, if we consider a very large network such as the silver network I was showing, then this Aronoff-Bohm oscillation disappears, and what is left is a much more regular curve as a function of the magnetic flux, and the period of this curve is clearly on this picture half of the quantum flux. Okay. So now I would like to discuss more into detail the quantum transport in networks, and I would like to emphasize on the non-local properties of this quantum transport. And so in principle,
is it obvious why it's half rather than one? Or you would say something about this?
Sorry, what?
You said period was half quantum flux rather than one.
Yeah,
you would say something about this?
Yeah. It's from this little picture. I mean, Aronoff-Bohm oscillation is interference between trajectories that go through the two different arms. Okay, so the two trajectories together enclose one quantum flux. Okay, so it carries a phase like this. So this makes this periodic function with quantum flux, whereas weak localization is due to interference of reverse loops. Therefore, the pair of loops, of reverse loop, carry twice the magnetic flux. So this makes the correction, well, this diminishes the period by a factor of two. So in principle, all this. So in the rest of the talk, I will be mostly interested in weak localization correction. Well, but more or less the same ideas would apply to also to Aronoff-Bohm oscillation of universal conductance fluctuation. So in principle, I mean, these quantities are given by a diagrammatic method, but I'm not going to these details. I will stay at the level of this very simple picture. And here I would like to emphasize that the weak localization correction is non-local in a network for two reasons. So, and it is very clear already on this little picture. So, in fact, there is some classical non-locality and there is also some quantum non-locality. So, what do I mean by that? Is that if I consider a network, even the classical conductance of a network is something which is non-local in the sense that it depends on the full network. It also depends on the way the network is connected. So, and there is some trace of this classical non-locality in the quantum correction, and this trace is in the leg of this little diagram. And there is also some quantum non-locality because this loop here, which is called, which is encoded in an object called the couperon. This loop can explore large distance in the network, and typically it explores distances over which phase coherence is ensured inside the network. So there are these two non-localities, and the first classical non-locality is related to the question of how, if I want to compute the weak localization correction to the conductance of a network, so this is the question how I have to average this couperon, that is how I have to weight the loop and to average this over the network. And one can show that the proper averaging involves the classical transport coefficient. That is, if the classical conductance can, well, the classical conductance can always be written as being proportional to an inverse effective length, which is given by the addition of classical resistances. And in order to properly average the couperon over the network, one should integrate the couperon inside a wire and weight this integral by the derivative of this effective length with respect to the length of the given wire. So, but I will now forget about this classical non-locality and will concentrate myself on this quantum non-locality. So next, this couperon is given is can be. Is given by some Green function of the Laplace operator in the system. And since I am considering a network of quasi-one-dimensional wires, in fact, the diffusion inside the wire is effectively one-dimensional, and therefore I am left with a problem of studying the diffusion in a network of strictly one-dimensional wire. But one should have in mind that at the root of the problem, there are wires which are really quasi one-dimensional and not strictly one-dimensional. So, so now, here I just want to emphasize that it is rather obvious that the classical transport is described by a diffusion problem because Ohm's law is related to diffusion. It's related to the fact that electron performs some diffusion motion. But here, I want to emphasize that also the quantum transport is related to properties of the diffusion in the system. So precisely, the weak localization correction to the conductivity is related to the Green's function of this Laplace operator. So here, I have also included the effect of the magnetic field through the vector potential, and which can, if you prefer, be written as the Laplace transform of this object, which is a little bit like a probability, which obeys this covariant-like diffusion equation. So, in principle, so if I want to compute the weak localization correction in any system, I have to solve this diffusion-like equation, and there, then it's Laplace transform, where, well, here the exponential damping originates from the fact that in real experiments, the quantum coherence is always finite. It occurs on a finite length scale. Therefore, I have to kill the contribution of trajectories which are much longer than a given length scale, which I call the phase coherent length, alpha.
I have a question.
Yeah?
You say diffusion. Do you mean elastic scattering, or do you mean diffusion, then you have a diffusion constant, which doesn't appear here.
Yeah, sorry, I forget. Yeah, I forgot the diffusion constant. Yeah, what I mean is that indeed there is elastic scattering, but then, so there is an elastic mean free path, which I was mentioning at the very beginning, but now I'm looking at large scale properties on which I can forget this. I'm going from random walk to diffusion. Okay, so at the large scale, indeed, electrons are performing, a real diffusion with a diffusion constant, which is related.
Because in French, you
yeah, there
you
is
know
a
this scattering.
Absolutely, there is a confusion
so
between scattering and diffusion. No, it's diffusion. It is diffusion.
On the left hand side, there is the diffusion operator. Forget this A field. It's a diffusion operator. It's not a Schrödinger operator.
Yeah.
Up to a constant diffusion constant, which he has left out.
So here it's indeed the diffusion operator.
There's no h-bar. H-bar equal to d equal to 1, but there's no I in. So this you can see.
Okay.
It's
not
So here, So again, I have to study the diffusion in the network. Okay. So here I would like to introduce some very convenient tool in order to attack such problem, which is the spectral determinant. So indeed, what I said is that the couperon here it's not written. Here it's the Green's function of this Laplace operator with some spectral parameter, and it is clear that if I integrate the couperon over the system, in fact, what I get is a trace of this operator, and this trace can be rewritten as a derivative of the trace of the log of the operator with respect to the spectral parameter, and I can again play and reverse the order of the trace and the log. And I am left with the log derivative with respect to the spectral parameter of an object that I formally write as determinant of gamma minus the Laplacian, and which I call the spectral determinant. So for a regular graph, I mean the weak localization is directly proportional to the log derivative of the spectral determinant. So again, I remind you that this spectral parameter is related to the inverse square of the phase coherence length. So why it is interesting to introduce this spectral determinant is because in networks, there is very convenient expression, there is a closed expression for the spectral determinant. So in principle, I'm studying diffusion in a network of one-dimensional wire, so the Laplacian acts on a space of infinite dimension. However, it is possible to show that the spectral determinant can be related to the determinant of a finite size matrix, which is defined here, and which has the dimension of the number of vertices. And this matrix encodes all the information about the network. So that is, it encodes the topology of the network through the connectivity matrix. So the connectivity matrix has element 1 between vertices that are connected by a bond, and 0 if vertices are not connected. It encodes the lengths of the wire inside this hyperbolic function, so the spectral parameter, and also magnetic fluxes in off-diagonal element. And the last point, it also encodes the way the network is connected to the external through this parameter lambda alpha, which are taken to be 0 for internal vertex, and which are infinite for absorbing vertex, that is when the network is connected to a reservoir. So to connect this to the talk we have seen yesterday, it means that at the vertices of the network, in fact, I impose some mixed boundary conditions, that is that at the vertex alpha, the sum of the derivative of the function on which act the Laplacian is proportional to lambda alpha times the function itself. Okay, and I have also continuity of the function. So here I would like to open a parenthesis and to point that there are a bunch of interesting works related to spectral determinants. So here it's absolutely not an exhaustive list, but I would like to mention that there is an interesting relation between spectral determinant and trace formula of the Laplace operator on graphs, and in fact which are simply related by Laplace transform. And this original trace formula was due to Roth in the 80s. And this trace formula has been used much more recently by Uzi Smilansky and Kotos in a series of very interesting work on quantum chaos in graph. So I would like also to mention that I was discussing spectral determinant on of the Laplacian on a graph, but it is also possible to obtain some very compact similar expression for the spectral determinant of the Schrödinger operator or the Hill operator on a network, and we can also consider not only this simple boundary condition, which are more natural for the diffusion problem I am interested in here, but also the completely general boundary condition. So now I close this parenthesis and I come back to my problem of quantum transport. And I would like to start with an extremely simple question, which is how to study Altshuler-Arnold-Spivak oscillation in an isolated ring. So it's a rather academic exercise, but it is quite instructive to start with this. So I remind you that if I study the weak localization correction of the ring, so weak localization correction is periodic function of the magnetic flux piercing the ring, and it is a convenient way to, in order to characterize this oscillation, to introduce the harmonics of this oscillation. And it is rather clear that the harmonics, the nth harmonic of the magnetoconductance is due to interferent trajectory winding n times around the loop. So therefore, the nth harmonic of the weak localization correction can be written as an integral of a probability to wind n times around the loop in a time t, and this probability we have to sum over all times and cut the sum with some exponential damping at some scale which is related to this phase coherence time or phase coherence length. Okay. So this is nothing else but computing the sum of contribution of interfering reverse loop. So in the case of the ring, it is very simple because the probability to wind n times in the time t is given by the usual diffusion. So it's the usual Gaussian. And the Laplace transform is very easily computed. And we get that the nth harmonic is behaving exponentially with the ratio of the perimeter of the ring divided by the phase coherence length. So just here to, since I made a little bit of publicity with this spectral determinant, it is just to show you that the same calculation can be done with the spectral determinant in an extremely easy way, because the ring is a network with one vertex and one bond. So the matrix which has a dimension of the number of vertex is just a number, and you see that there are this Cotes function in the diagonal element and this. So the spectral determinants have the structure of hyperbolic cosine of the perimeter minus the cosine of the flux, and the log derivative of this object, the Fourier transform of the log derivative immediately gives the previous result. So it is also interesting to point that we have seen on this simple example that spectral determinant can be understood as a generating function in order to study various properties of the diffusion inside the network. And indeed, we have seen that the time is conjugated to the spectral parameter gamma. We have seen also that the magnetic flux is conjugated to a winding number, since these are trajectories which wind n times around a flux that gives rise to the nth harmonic. And, we can continue to play with this game, and indeed, we can also fix the starting point if we want to study the Couperon at a given point, that is this Green's function, by introduce some boundary condition with a parameter lambda naught at x naught. And we can also introduce other parameter conjugated to other variables, and this has been used in order to study occupation time distribution or local time distribution in such networks. So now, the aim of the end of this first part is to study how this Altshuler-Arnold-Spivak oscillation are affected by the full topology of the network. Previously, I showed you the simple exercise of the Altshuler-Arnold-Spivak oscillation in a single ring, but it's, as I said, it was rather academic, because if we want to study transport in a network, we have to connect the network through external leads. So one could ask the question how the surrounding network around the ring will affect the shape of the Altshuler-Arnold-Spivak oscillation. So first, let me start with at first sight slightly different question, which is to study the winding in a ring which is connected to a long arm. So again, if I apply the ideas I have presented in the previous slide, I would like to study the probability to start at point zero, which is this vertex, come back after a time t at the same point, and after winding n times around the ring. So this is the quantity that is here of interest. And again, I'm not going into the detail, but I would like just to emphasize that this can be studied extremely easily with the help of the spectral determinant, and I have to just to introduce the appropriate conjugate parameter with respect to the different quantity I have introduced here. And it is easy to show that the spectral determinant of this network has the same structure of the as the spectral determinant of the isolated ring, that is a hyperbolic cosine minus cosine of the flux. But here, instead of having the perimeter of the ring, I have some effective perimeter that depend on the spectral parameter, and that is defined by this equation. And so therefore, the Laplace transform, the spectral, I remind you that the spectral determinant is related to the Laplace transform of this probability. The Laplace transform of the probability that interests me here has also the structure of an exponential n times with this effective perimeter. So it's already very easy to see some interesting feature, that is that this winding number presents some scaling with time, which is square root of time divided by the effective perimeter. Indeed, I remind you that the spectral parameter is conjugated to the time. So we see that we can distinguish two different regimes. So the first regime, when I consider the limit of a large spectral parameter, I can see that the effective perimeter is just given by the perimeter of the ring, and therefore the winding number scale as square root of the time, which is the usual diffusion in a sense around the ring. And in the other regime where the perimeter is much smaller than the inverse square root of the spectral parameter, we have a different scaling with time, which I'm now going to explain. And so how can we understand that there are different scaling of the winding number with time? And it is easy to understand this point by noticing that the problem of asking the question of winding in the ring connected to an arm can be mapped into a problem of moving along the skeleton of a cone. And so asking the question what is the probability to wind n times is the same as asking the probability what is the probability to make n steps along the skeleton. And each arm in the cone can be thought as a little trap, and the trapping time probability is given by the first return probability in one dimension. And this first return probability, it is well known to behave algebraically with time. And there is a little theorem that tells me that if I study a problem of diffusion between traps, and if I have here on each trap the probability of the trapping time probability presents an algebraic tail which is such that the trapping time doesn't have a first moment, so average of tau is infinity, then the distance that is the typical distance made by the mover along the skeleton scale with time like mu over 2. So here, in this case, since this exponent mu is 1/2, indeed, the distance performed along the skeleton scale with time like t to the power 1 over 4. So, I mean, we can also do a little bit better and get the full probability to wind n times around the ring, and one can indeed show that it is given by some dimensionless function of the scaling variable n divided by t to the power 1/4. So now, I would like to come back. So I would like to come back to the problem of quantum transport and how these winding properties affect the transport properties of the network. And so I ask the question: how behave the Altshuler-Arnold-Spivak oscillation of a ring which is connected at two long arms? And I can distinguish two regimes in this case. So there is first a regime where the phase coherence length is much smaller than the perimeter of the ring, okay? And in this case, it is already very difficult to wind around the ring. Therefore, trajectories cannot really explore the arms of the ring, and the harmonic of the conductance are very similar to the one for the isolated ring. Additionally, there is some factor 2/3 to some power, which is related here to the crossing of these vertices. And in fact, I can point that this 2/3 is exactly the same as the 2/3 we have seen yesterday in the matrices of Professor Minchev talk. So then there is also a second regime where the phase current length is much bigger than the perimeter of the ring. And in this case, because electronic trajectories can expand over distances which are of the order of the phase current length, then when they do wind around the ring, they are sensitive to an effective perimeter which is much more long than the real perimeter of the ring, and therefore the harmonic decreases much faster than this behavior. And so this is, I mean, from the important experimental point of view, this is important because the interest in studying Altshuler-Arnold-Spivak oscillation is that we can extract some information of on the phase coherence length in such networks. So if here there is some additional exponent within what is interpreted as a phase current length, one should take into account this exponent in order to correctly interpret experiment in order to extract correctly some phase current lengths. So since time is going on, we can play with this game in other geometries. I'm going to skip that. Just here, I would like to look at a comparison with experiments. So there are some experiments realized in very large square networks. And if we apply, the same basic formalism based on the spectral determinant, we can indeed quite reproduce the shape of the experimental magnetoconductance in a rather satisfactory way, as you can see on this plot. So next, I will go to the second part of my talk, which concerns the effect of electron-electron interaction in networks. And in fact, I would like to come back to the way I introduced before decoherence in the system. So decoherence, I mean by that when I consider interference phenomena, these interference phenomena are always perturbed by the fact that an electron can interact with other degrees of freedom, like interaction with phonons, or interaction with other electrons, or with spin, or I don't know what. So in order to introduce this, to take into account for the fact that phase coherence is limited in real samples, what I have done before was to tell you, okay, the weak localization correction is the sum of contribution of interfering reverse loops. And I have cut this sum by hand by introducing some exponential damping related to some time scale tau phi, which is a phase coherence time. But in fact, this I have done this I mean, rather abruptly, and it is not really clear if it's fully justified if we have in mind real breaking phase processes. And indeed, if we consider the case of the phase breaking mechanism as electronic twin interaction, it turns out that this simple procedure is not correct. And the reason why it is not correct is that the effect of electron-electron interaction can be seen still in a one-electron picture as the contribution of the fact that other electrons contribute as and create some fluctuating electric field which is seen by one given electron and which has some random phase. And the fluctuation of this electric field depends on the geometry of the system, and therefore we cannot simply introduce some exponential damping independently on the properties of the system. So there has been some model which has been proposed some time ago by Altshuler, Arnoff, and Magnitsky, and which relies on the idea I was mentioning. That is, we keep working with this one electron picture, but we take into account the other electron by adding to the contribution of the interference of reverse loop phase, which is related to the phase picked up by the electron moving in the random electrostatic field. So I'm not going to enter much into the detail, but just to give you an idea of what should be done. And so now, if I consider the nth harmonic of the weak localization correction, so again, so in a ring, for example, it's again given by the probability to wind n times around the ring in time t. But now, the simple exponential damping should be replaced by the average of this random phase due to electrostatic fluctuations. And it is possible to show that this function describing the breaking of phase coherence is not given by a simple exponential damping, but by the average of some functional of the trajectory. So x of tau is the trajectory of the electron inside the network. And it involves some important length scale, which is called the Nyquist length, which is inversely proportional to the temperature to the power 1/3. And the important point is to notice that this exponential functional involves a function which is related to the solution of the diffusion equation in the system. So this is where the structure, this is where the geometry of the system enters, because so the decoherence now depends on the network through this function, which depends on the solution of, which is related to the solution of the diffusion equation. So first, decoherence depends on the network, and moreover, it depends also on the trajectory, because the nth harmonic is related to involved trajectories at one n times, and we can expect that this function describing decoherence depends also on the winding number, for example.
5 minutes.
Okay. So this problem has been originally studied in an infinite wire. So in this case, the function entering the decoherence is simply given by this expression. And the theory recalls the original result of Altshuler, Aronoff, and Magnitsky. But I don't want to go too much into the detail, but just to point that in the infinite wire, because there is, the problem only include one length scale, which is the Nyquist length here, through the function describing decoherence. In fact, we can show that relaxation of phase coherence also occur on a time scale which is given by the Nyquist time, which is related to the Nyquist length in this way, so that is, which is proportional to to the temperature to the power minus 2/3. In a ring, in fact, this problem can also be studied, and but here the situation is slightly more complicated because I not only have the Nyquist length, but I have also the perimeter of the ring, and therefore, well, if I moreover have in the problem, let's say, other phase breaking mechanism described by the phase current length related to exponential damping, I have to combine these three lengths, and indeed they do combine in a way which is quite non-trivial, and which shows that some new length scale appear in the problem, which is related, which is a combination of the Nyquist length and the perimeter of the ring. So this new length scale is related. So as I said, is behaving like the temperature to the power minus 1/2, whereas the Nyquist length was behaving like the temperature to the power minus 1/3. And indeed, the modification is more clear to see if we consider the case where there is the only phase breaking mechanism is electron-electron interaction. And indeed, one can show that the harmonic of the magnetoconductance behave, well, do involve this second length scale instead of this length scale. So the harmonics do behave exponentially with t to the power 1/2. So since I only have 2 minutes, I can tell you the origin of this new length scale. So the origin of this new length scale is can be explained rather simply with the Johnson-Nyquist theorem. So indeed, phase coherence, so decoherence is due to fluctuation of the potential, and fluctuation of the potential are characterized by Johnson-Nyquist theorem. So the diffusion of the phase, so it can be shown to be related to integral of the correlation function, which is given, which is proportional to temperature, times a resistance. And the resistance is a resistance for a wire with a typical length with, related to the time t I am considering. So you see that this can be rewritten as the length, so diffusion of the phase, is proportional to this typical length divided by the Nyquist time to the power 3/2. And I can distinguish two regimes, where a diffusive regime where this typical length scale behaves like square root of t, and in this case, the diffusion of the phase involves the Nyquist time, and an ergodic regime where the typical length scale is the perimeter of the ring itself. And therefore, in this case, we see that the diffusion of the phase involves this new time scale related to this length scale. So, and indeed, it is rather clear to see that if we consider the zero harmonic, then the zero harmonic at short times involves trajectories that do not explore the full ring, and therefore we are in the first regime, and we are the important length scale is the Nyquist time, whereas if we consider the non-zero harmonic necessarily winds around the ring, and therefore involve this second time scale. So there is some trace in the experiment of this fact. That is, indeed, if we study weak localization correction of large network, in the regime, in the high temperature regime where rings can be thought as independent, in fact, indeed, the envelope which is related, the envelope of the magnetoconductance which is related to trajectories that do not wind is related to the time Nyquist length, t to the power minus 1/3, and the Altschuler-Ramanauskas-Spivak oscillation involves the other length scale, t to the power minus 1/2. So we can also play the game with other geometries, but I'm not going to enter this.
You continue. No, you can continue, but then there will be no questions.
Yeah.
So it's your choice.
No.
Either you continue 5 more minutes and there are no questions, or you give some time to questions.
No, I stop. So I wanted to mention also some other contribution, but I'm not going to mention. And here is a list of some works covered by the presentation. So thank you very much.
I think this was a delightful and intriguing talk, and I think there would be questions.
The first thing is I'm still confused between diffusion and scattering, because the diffusion equation is a classical equation, so there is no interference between parts. The operator which you have there is the Wiener operator, and it is not the Feynman operator. So how do you get...
Yeah, no, sorry. It's because, in fact, I have skipped many details. What I showed is that weak localization correction is... Well, I draw these little pictures, okay? But, these little pictures are coming, from... It's diagrammatic... method. So, in other terms, they are related to certain class of diagrams. And so, another way to draw this kind of picture is to consider, for example, conductivity. Okay. And so, this picture is really equivalent to the following picture, where here I have a diffusion, here I have a couperon.
I think you're using language that many of us don't know.
I think that Uzi
knows. To answer all of
okay, us. But and this part, if you want, or this part, can be shown to obey to a diffusion equation. But
I'm asking this because we are here talking. If you talk about graphs and quantum graphs, then on quantum graphs you can have quantum evolution without any diffusion, and then the disorder which you have might be used, might if you have lengths which are non-commensurate, is when you either average over energy, over the wave number, or if you average, so this is what you do in quantum chaos, you take a fixed system and you average over energy, or if you want to introduce disorder, you can change average over the length, distribution of lengths. After all, your grid is not
But
perfect.
Here...
So my question really is, and this is the question, if you do what I am suggesting, will you get any essentially different results than what you did so far?
So what you have in mind is networks with ballistic wires.
Exactly.
Okay, so then...
graphs.
Yeah. But I have in mind wires, metallic wires with diffusion, but I... No, so I don't know the...
It's a question, it's not a statement.
Well, I guess so, but I don't know how to do this, but because, we know that also in ballistic system, in the chaotic regime, quantum transport coefficient also presents some weak localization correction.
Of course.
So I guess there should be some similar contribution, but I don't know how to study in this framework, this kind of continuity in such ballistic, chaotic graph. No.
Other questions? And I have a question. I think at least some part of the audience here is our mathematicians, and I think they would, particularly me, I would be more interested in understanding the conceptual issues rather than the many beautiful phenomena that you succeeded in explaining. So I would be really very happy if you would explain to me. So this weak localization appears to do a miracle, right? It starts with the Schrödinger equation, and it ends up with the diffusion business. Now, can you summarize in a simple way what is the limit at which weak localization is the limit of Schrödinger equations become diffusion? Can it be formulated as a limit or in some other way?
It's not really that the Schrödinger equation become diffusive equation, because what we are studying is an object which is represented here, which is not a wave function one particle Green function, but it's a two particle Green function. And the two particle Green function the important contribution to this two-particle average Green's function are this diffusion and couperons. And, the limit in which this diffusion equation appears is this weak disorder limit where this KF LE is much bigger than 1.
So for example, would this still be a correct limit at T equals 0? At 0 temperature?
Temperature.
Right. For example, is at T equals 0, I mean, everything is coherent. So there is no log coherence.
So in principle, if I'm thinking at disorder, it's a static disorder, so there is no temperature. But we know that in practice we have to. I mean, there should be some phase breaking mechanism. Otherwise, there are some.
I'm not a practical person.
Yeah.
So no practice. I'm just thinking a theoretical question. At T equals zero, then the whole system is just one big atom, and that's it. There is nothing to be done. There is no diffuson or Couperon. I don't know. So probably what you are describing is some limit. He's getting excited.
No, but everybody wants to have coffee. We can discuss it later.
Okay, so I think it's right. Let's thank.
I would make two quick announcements.
Sorry.
First of all, about publication.